Okay. All right. Thanks very much, everyone, for coming tonight. It's lovely to see everyone again. And as you can see, tonight's subject is As Iron Sharpens Iron. So, and this is session 5 of our study week studies. So we've only got one more session to go, and then we're there. Then we're at study week. So it's pretty exciting. Okay. What we'll do is we'll offer a word of prayer to our Father in Heaven. So if you'd like to just remain seated, I'll do that. Yahweh, our great God, we thank you for this time that we've had, Father, that we have not now here tonight, to open your word, to learn from characters that you have put in your word there, that we can put into practice in our own lives the practical lessons that we can learn from them, and that we can see how they served you and how you use them as well as your tool. So, Father, we also thank you for the beautiful day that you gave us, the proof that you are the true God with the creation around us. And we thank you again for the safety that we have here tonight. We ask that you be with those that are still coming and with those that could not be here this night. So we pray that you'll watch over us now. Through Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Come in, don't be shy. Have a seat. Okay, if everyone would like to open up to page 122 of their notes, that's where you can see this here, As Iron Sharpens Iron, page 122. Does anyone know where that quote is from, As Iron Sharpens Iron? Proverbs what? It's good, good. Oh, this might even work. It's close. 27. Okay. I'm just trying to... No. This one?
No.
Oh, right. Okay. Proverbs chapter 27, verse 17. Jot that down underneath that little thing there on your title. As iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. Okay, so this is where that quote has been taken from for this session tonight. And that's what the quote is. As iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. What does that mean? We can see there the word highlighted, so a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. So what is, first of all, let's look at countenance. What does it mean by countenance of his friend? Does anyone know?
Character?
Yep. Demeanor? Yeah, no, I think it's...
Face.
That's right, yep. And, oops. Demeanor, the way they are, is it demeanor like the way they sort of put off themselves? Does that make sense? What's the
disposition?
Yep. Well, let's look for some. Here we go. Strong's number 6440. I didn't have to look it up. I knew it. The face. It says the face, or as the part that turns. Or presence. Okay, so that's what a few people said then. And then I looked it up in the dictionary and it says, the face, especially when considered as expressing a person's mood. So I found that interesting. That's kind of got to do with the word which we were trying to figure out, which was demeanour. So someone's countenance is their personality, their character, the way they are in a certain situation. So when we go back and we have a look at this here, as iron sharpens iron, so a man sharpens the countenance or the character, the personality, the way they are, the way they present themselves of his friend. So what we want to do in this session is we want to see that. We want to see that coming out of Elijah and who we're going to be introduced to tonight, Elisha. So we're going to try and continue to come back to that. Now, as a bit of a practical thing, I've got two bits of iron here. For those on the speakerphone, I'm holding up two really big samurai swords. And you can see, if like iron sharpening iron, okay, I don't know if anyone's ever been to the butcher, but you've got like one, they have this rod, right? So pretend this one's the rod, and then they've got the knife, and they go like this, okay? So what it's doing is, it's actually... should watch that, I might turn it that way. So when it's sharpening, it's actually making an impact and making an effect on this other knife here, right? So as iron sharpens iron, so it's actually doing something. It's practically changing it, okay? Making it into a shape. And that's what a friend can do to the countenance, a man can do to the countenance of his friend. So there we go. There's the man. There's a photograph I prepared earlier. That's the butcher, and he's sharpening that knife. So as that rod scrapes past that knife, it changes it and it sharpens it. Okay? So that's what we're going to look at tonight. How did Elijah change and sharpen and change the countenance of Elisha, and Elisha do the same to Elijah? Because they both did it there. So as we go through what God's given us in the Bible and what we've got in the notes, we're going to see that come out. So this session, this is what we're going to look at. We're going to see the introduction of Elisha to Elijah. We're going to see the difference between the two of them. Okay, there's a big difference between both of them. But we're going to remember that God chose both of them. So although they're different, God still chose them both. They both needed to learn lessons and be shaped by each other, which is what we've just looked at, which is the theme for tonight. So they both learnt lessons off each other and they both shaped each other. How God tried to comfort Elijah in a time that he was unsure and needed strength. We've already seen a few times where Elijah needed that of God. He needed God's guidance and strength, and we're going to see that again tonight, God comforting Elijah. And this is seen. This is also seen in the breakup, which we're given on page 123 there of our overview for the session. And Brother Paul Deller will be doing the second half of tonight, and he's, as you can see, I'm doing sort of that shaded area. So we're going to be looking at there where Elijah meets Elisha. We're going to be looking at Elijah and Elisha's journey, and then I'm going to just touch in a little bit there on Elijah and Elisha leaving Israel, and that's when Paulie will take over. And he'll be looking at then Elijah's departure, which is quite an exciting story. Okay, so you can follow us through on the notes, so we'll turn it over there. Okay, so we're introduced to, let's turn to 1 Kings chapter 19 with your Bibles, please. Okay, now this is where we see Elijah meets Elisha, the first part of our breakup there. And so we see in verse 19 of chapter 19 of 1 Kings, "So he," that is Elijah, "departed thence and found Elisha, the son of Shaphat, who was ploughing with 12 yoke of oxen before him, and he with the 12th. And Elijah passed by him and cast his mantle upon him. And he left the oxen and ran after Elijah and said, 'Let me, I pray thee, kiss my father and my mother, and then I will follow thee.' And he said unto him, 'Go back again, for what have I done to thee?'" And then we see that Elijah then goes back to his family, and we'll address that in a moment. Welcome. Okay. So, the first thing we've been introduced to is Elisha. Now, this could have been Elisha, but I've been told that he actually looks more like that. Okay, so he's not the best looking bloke. No, this is just an artist impression from the internet, just to get a bit of an idea of, you know. I don't know about you, but I like to be able to picture people in my mind. And then, of course, we know that Elijah looks much like that. So there's Elisha and Elijah together there, so we can picture that as we go along in our story. Okay, now why does this apply, this as iron sharpens iron? Before we get down into it, let's just look at this first. Why, you know, we mentioned we want to see how this comes out amongst the two characters. Well, first of all, Elijah. Okay, where's he at? The story so far. We know that Elijah's had a lot to do with Ahab, and we know a lot of the stories there that happened there with Ahab. We know that he went to the widow of Zarephath. He brought a drought upon the nation. It's a bit out of order, but this is all the things that have happened. We had the ravens. He was being fed by ravens, and he had to trust in God that God was going to provide him with water. There was then the sacrifice which God consumed. There was the threat of Jezzy, or otherwise known as Jezebel. And then he says, I only am left. He kept saying that, I only am left. And then we know that, and we've seen last week that God speaks to him. That's what we went through last week. So that's where we're at with Elijah. And Elisha, what do we know about him so far? Well, he's a farmer. He's ploughing, he has many oxen, and he's working for his family. Okay, so these are what we know of these two people. So from that, we'll then see how these two men start to work together. Now this is an interesting point, which the notes point out, is that Elijah goes straight to Elisha. He was the instructions from God on the mountain in 1 Kings 19, verse 15 to 16, were to anoint Hazael, king of Syria. It was said to anoint Jehu to be king over Israel and Elisha to be the prophet in your place. So those were the instructions that Elijah was given by God. And we know that later on Elisha actually goes back and anoints Hazael king of Syria and anoints Jehu to be king over Israel. Now Paul might touch a bit on this a bit later as well. But we'll continue on. So just you can do some more work on that. There's some notes on it. There's some points on it in the notes. And if you're interested in, you can look at that yourself and sort of think, well, hang on a second, why is it that Elijah did this? Why did he miss these other two? And why did he go straight to Elisha? But it's worth pointing out, because that's what we have here. We have God speaking to him, and then bang, verse 19, he goes straight to Elisha. There's no thought about anything else. Okay, now let's get back to it. What was Elisha doing when Elijah came to him? One, he's ploughing. He was a farmer. I find this an interesting point, and this was brought up way back at the beginning when we were talking about Elijah and where Elijah comes from. We also know that a lot of other characters in the Bibles, there's only one Bible, don't be too concerned, was Moses. Moses, when he... after he tried to do his own thing in Egypt, tried to get the people of Israel to be on his side and take charge, God said, no, the time's not now, and he sent him out into the wilderness, and he was a shepherd out there. Abraham was also, he had sheep and cattle and all that kind of thing. Elijah, as we know, he lived in a hilly country that was very well known for to have cattle. Gideon, when the angel came to Gideon was actually... tossing the wheat, I think it was. Okay, so again, some kind of farmer. David was a shepherd. The disciples were fishermen. So we have another character here, Elisha, that God has chosen to do his work, and we find that he's a farmer. I think it's just an interesting point, because it just helps us to think, well, hang on a second, these kind of people were chosen because maybe of their characteristics and things like that. And I think sometimes if we were right out of Sydney and we were sitting alone, and we could think about God a lot more. So perhaps a bit of a suggestion there that we should try and find some more time to sit alone and talk to God. Okay, 12 yoke of oxen. Now, I'm assuming that a yoke is actually two cows, so that means that he actually had 24 cows, but there was 12 yokes. So a yoke is when the yoke goes over the neck of the cattle, and there's two in a row, and they work like that. So there's 24 of them, but there's 12 of them. Now, we know that there's 12 tribes of Israel as well. This is just an interesting point. And when you really start to think about it, you think, well, wow, this is interesting. I mean, David was a shepherd, and he became a shepherd of men. The disciples were fishermen. They became fishers of men. And here we have Elisha, and we know that his work was going to be to continue what Elijah was doing. And so here we see him working with 12 yoke of oxen. So we could then see that as him working in the nation and working and instructing them and things like that. And I've got there, just to remind myself, relate to Elijah and Elisha, the working in the rain, along the same lines. We had a drought for about 3 years, so we've got this time where there was a drought, and perhaps this time where it ploughs, and the notes point this out, where he's ploughing, that this could be the first ploughing for that season. And so it sort of links in there with what Elisha's done, because there was no rain and bang, there's rain, and then you've got Elisha working, and it's just like he's taking over from Elijah. I don't know if that makes sense, but just a nice little thought how it all kind of links in with a bit of a metaphor. Okay, the mantle. We want to look at the mantle. Before we do that, just to get a really good idea of what we're actually looking at here, this is exactly what happened. A really good idea of what happened. And now what we want to do is we want to look at that mantle, okay? The mantle that was thrown over him. This is a very, very strange thing that happens here. Elijah walks up to him. If everyone would like to turn to page 126 of their notes as well, that'd be great. So Elijah walks straight up to him, sees what he's doing, throws the mantle over the top of him, which is like a coat, and just keeps walking, okay? And what we're going to look at is we want to look at these things and we want to see the responses and of Elisha and that kind of thing as well. If I could get one person to turn up, we'll start up the front and we'll work our way around. So first, just the first three. So 1 Samuel 28, 2 Kings 2 and 2 Kings 2. So Koo, if you'd like to read out 1 Samuel chapter 28, and everyone else can turn there if you like as well. Verse 14, please. Okay, what we're doing here is we're looking at other areas where a mantle has been mentioned. We want to try and figure out why did he throw the mantle on him? Why did he just walk up, throw the mantle? Why didn't he give him his shoe or his hat or something like that? Why this mantle? Thank you. Okay, so what we have here is we have Saul's gone to the lady that, what do they call them, like a soothsayer, to try and get some wisdom out of her, right? And so that's exactly what she says. Now, so what? What does that mean to us? Okay, remember what happened in the vision? She saw the man with the mantle, and then Saul responds. So what does this kind of tell us? Yep, bang. Okay, so Saul perceived it was Samuel because of his garment. So it was, therefore, we can, as Steve just said, we can perceive that it was a common garment of a prophet. Okay, beautiful. 2 Kings 2 verse 8, please. Okay, what does that tell us about the mantle? Something else about a mantle.
Soaks up heaps of water.
Soaks up heaps of water? Maybe. Anyone else? You can do miracles with it, so what's that telling us, perhaps? Yep. Well, God's power was working in that scenario, was working through it. Perhaps. So, yeah, that's what they're along the lines that... So Elijah used the mantle in that scenario to show God's power. Okay, so he smote the water with the mantle and the water stood back and they could then walk across it on as if it were dry land. Okay, and the last one there, 2 Kings 2, verse 13 to 14. Thank you very much. Okay, so what, along similar lines as that one there, what can we see from that? That's right. So Elisha now had the role of the prophet, which meant that he had that same power that Elijah did. Okay, so we can see from that by Elijah walking up to Elisha and just throwing this mantle on top of him, that representation there alone was Elijah's pleasant way of saying, "You're next. God wants you to be the prophet. This mantle is going to be yours. I'm going to pass it on to you. You're going to take that baton and you're going to be the prophet in Israel and you're going to have the power that I have to prove God to Israel." Okay, so that's why he threw his mantle on top of him. Now, we've got down there our mantle. We can get a little lesson out of this because we are also being thrown or given a mantle. As we as young people grow up, the older people in our community are saying, "Look, you guys are going to take the leading role." And that's why we're here. That's why we're studying our Bibles, so that we can do that, God willing. And so we have the same opportunity to do that, right? So we need to, as we're going through this, we can say, okay, well, why don't I see myself as Elisha then? If Elisha learnt from Elijah and they were working off each other and shaping each other, as we know that as iron sharpens iron, what can I get out of this? What kind of lessons can I learn? And I think that's a really valuable and important point, because that is going to happen, that if Christ remains away, that we are going to become the leaders and of our community, and that's a very, very important a very, very important role. Yeah. Yeah, please add anything as the night goes on.
In the garments, and we're going to renew our vows every week. We're sort of washing our garments every time, back to white.
Yes, yeah.
So I guess it could mean that as well.
Yeah.
When we're baptized, we get new, or we get a garment in a sense.
Yeah.
And then it's our responsibility to do God's work from it.
Yep.
Show God's character.
That's great. Yeah. Good point. For those on the speakerphone, Paul was just saying that it's just like our baptism each week, as we renew our vows and our covenant with God, in the same way we're serving God by putting on that new cloak and becoming a new man. Okay, now is anyone? Yep. Okay, so now we want to look at Elisha's response, okay, which should also, and we'll have a look at this, should be our response. And we saw Elisha's response in that little clip that we saw before. Okay, let's turn to it. Verse 20 of chapter 19. Let's work through it together. 1 Kings 19, verse 20. Yell out Elisha's response and we'll go through it. Number one, what did Elisha do? He left the oxen. Bang. Number two, ran after Elijah. Very good. Number three. Yep, spoke to Elijah. I've missed that one. So he spoke to Elijah and he asked Elijah if he could go back and "Let me, I pray thee, kiss my father and my mother and then I will follow thee." Okay, so he goes back and then what does he do? Yes. So we should probably read this, shouldn't we? Just so we all know. I'll just read that there. Verse 21. "And he returned back from him and took a yoke of oxen and slew them and boiled their flesh with instruments of the oxen." So that's the instruments that he worked with while he was working with them. "And gave unto the people and they did eat. Then he arose and went after Elijah and ministered unto him." Okay, so we see there that that there's a sacrifice. There's a sacrifice of a yoke of oxen, which is two oxen, and he also, it seems as though he uses the instruments that he worked with them to actually prepare it and to then burn the oxen. So his instruments that he used were destroyed along with the oxen. What else? What does he do then? gives it to the people. So the people, I'd say, is his family. Yeah, his family and his father's household. It's actually, it's in the notes as well, and it actually talks that, it says that in Jeremiah there's a quote where usually each family only had actually one oxen. This family has 12 yoke of oxen, so 24. So it indicates that they could have been a fairly well-off family, and if that's the case, there'd be a lot of servants and that kind of thing as well. So he gives them to the people, and they eat. It doesn't say anything about him eating, which is interesting, because we're going to look at this idea of him now separating himself, getting himself away from that family. And then what does he do? He arose and followed Elijah. So he arose and followed Elijah. Okay, so, one, he straight away, the mantle's thrown on him, straight away he leaves the oxen, walks away, goes straight to Elijah, asks Elijah if he can go back. Elijah says yes. So he goes back. Now, why does he go back? It would be valuable to have a look in the notes, and because we know that there are some scenarios in the life of Christ where Christ, someone said, oh, I need to go and bury my mother or my father, or I need to go and say goodbye. And Christ said, no, drop everything and follow me. Now, there's a difference in this, because Elisha wasn't going back to sit down and hang out and sort of, you know, be there because he was going to miss his family. Of course he was going to, and be there because he wanted to be there. He wanted to follow Elijah, and that's why he was going back. This was a demonstration to everyone there that this is what he was doing. Because he gets those oxen that he works with, and he sacrifices them. He burns the instruments that he works with, so he can't come back to anything. There's nothing for him to work with. He gives it to them to eat, so they all eat, and they're having fellowship together while he leaves, arises and goes back to Elijah and ministers unto him. I think it's a brilliant point. Yeah. Okay. 127 page of the notes, please. The think about and the application there on page 127. Midway through the page there, let's think about this. If God is going to be anything in our lives, he's got to be everything. 100% commitment is what God wants from us. Underline that, highlight it, put stars next to it. It is a common thought in young people that we will commit to God when we finish school or uni, or when things are going smoothly in our lives. If we believe the truth, Jesus tells us that we cannot put off our commitment. Okay, so is this how we see it? Is this how we see the truth? Are we putting in the commitment that Elisha put in? I definitely know that I'm not, and there's definitely things that I could put into place to try and make my life a bit better so that I am. What about yourself? You know, think about that and maybe write down a few things, which is then moves on to this application here. Do we make the cut with things in our life? The Apostle Paul talks about cutting off the flesh with its affections and lusts. In other words, don't give an opportunity for your baser instincts to take over. Sometimes we think of these things in terms of major sins, and sometimes don't think about minor sins. We need to remember that sin is sin regardless of the severity we may put on it. And here, this is quite powerful, and if you do it, it can be quite hurtful. Think about your character. Are there any things in your character that you think that you need to change? For example, always being right, ridiculing other people, manipulating situations for your own ends. Perhaps all those things there that are just down on the example, we could do all of them in certain situations. We may have one thing that is harder for us than another. And I'm sure there's many more that things in our own character that we can change to help us to focus a lot more on God. So here's a question here. Elijah needed to make the cut with these things, and Elisha made them. Okay, so when we look at the life, what the notes are saying there is when we look at Elijah, there seem to be things that he was hung up on that he couldn't get over, and I think what it's referring to is the fact that he kept saying, I'm the only one left, I'm the only one left, I'm the only one left. Because in the end, that was his downfall. Because God said, well, no, there's not, there's more. And now I need Elisha to work for me, and I want you to go to him, and he will minister to you, and then you'll be taken up in a whirlwind. So the question there, let's have it, open it up. The things in our life that we need to get rid of, whatever they may be, how can we get rid of them? Okay, because right now we could all be sitting here saying, oh yeah, no, I could, a few little things here and there. And like, it could be small, it could be big, doesn't matter, it's there. So we don't have to get specific, but how can, if you want, we can, but how can we get rid of things in our lives that are a hurdle to us? Yep.
Because it depends on what the title is, as iron sharpens iron.
Yep.
So I mean, sharpens countenance to your friends. So it depends on what friends you have. They're going to sharpen you in a certain way. So if you have bad friends or people that aren't really interested in God, then they're going to change your demeanour, not in a way that's not really interested in God.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. So
that's one way of cutting off issues in life.
Yep. So Steve just said, as iron sharpens iron, which is our theme for the night. So the friends that we involve ourselves around, the people that we are with, the things that we do, the things that we go to. It'd be good to write that there under that box. If you haven't, anything else? Any other ideas? Okay. Well, perhaps have a think about that in your own time and write a few things down. That could definitely come up in the discussion groups. A leader could ask questions like that, and it'd be great to have some discussion points on that. Okay, so we then see this next idea of that it says Elisha ministered unto him. So Elisha ministered unto Elijah. I looked it up in the concordance and it said to serve or wait on. Any other ideas of what it means to minister under someone? I mean, in this scenario of Elijah and Elisha, what do we think it means that Elisha ministered unto Elijah? Yes, I think so, yeah. So he was developing spiritually. So Elijah was developing Elisha, or Elisha was developing Elijah, or both? Both, yeah. But definitely Elisha went to him for that, definitely. Live with him? I'd say so, yeah. I'd say they were together the whole time. I don't know. But as we get a bit further on, the story jumps 10 years, so but when we then come to the next part, they're together and Elisha's saying, Elijah, I'm not leaving you, I'm not going anywhere. So you would think that yeah, they are definitely together.
So it said the same thing about Samuel ministered unto Yahweh.
Yep, Samuel ministered unto Yahweh. What does that mean? Can you read the context of the verse?
It's in the context.
So I'd say, yeah, served, listened to, learnt from, yeah. Yep. Okay, so, yeah, those points then from there on as well. Elisha was with him for 10 years. So, as I said, the story jumps 10 years forward. So that whole time, Elisha was with Elijah. He's learning. Okay, because he was thrown, that mantle was thrown upon him. We know that Elijah then takes that back because it's later on that Elisha then receives it for good. But he knows that he's going to take over what Elijah's doing. So, for example, if Thomas was going to be a plumber, right, he is actually, he's going to be doing work experience with me soon. So Thomas is going to come to work with me as work experience, and Thomas is going to be there and he's going to be over my shoulder, he's going to be watching, he's going to be listening to how I talk to clients, what I say, how I get out of mistakes. No, that's not true. What I say, how I do it, how I take out an outlet valve out of a toilet, how I put a new one in. Okay, so he's going to be watching. This is exactly what Elisha was doing. He was also there for help, and he was also there for comfort. Okay, and Elijah was also there for Elisha's help and comfort as well. So they were there as friends. They were two different people there that we see. They were so different, but they were together, and Elisha was with him and watching him, and a student is a good way to see it. For example there, they were so different. And then I've got there, us and others, talks we hear. That makes no sense, does it? But what I'm meaning by that is we are also very, very different. And we're going to get to this if you turn to page 129. I'm pretty sure that's what I'm thinking of. Yes. So this is when we think of everyone in this room, for example, or everyone that's going to be at Study Week, we're all from different places. We're all from different areas of Australia, of the world. And we're totally different. We have totally different characters. We have totally different ways of thinking. But we have one thing that is just outweighs anything else, and that is the truth. We have the Bible in front of us, and we believe the same thing. And that outweighs absolutely everything. And that's Elisha and Elijah. These two men were so devoted to what they knew and to what they were doing that everything else kind of didn't matter in the end, because, you know, yeah, they would have had their, you know, maybe their arguments and things like that, but ultimately they were going towards the same goal. Okay, they knew what they wanted, and that's where they were heading. And also there, talks we hear. Sometimes we hear some talks that, you know, you could walk away and you can just go, you know what, I didn't get anything out of that because it wasn't aimed at me, it wasn't for me. Well, I can guarantee every single talk that you listen to, you will get one point from, if not more. So it's the same way, and the only reason I bring that up is because it's the same, you know, when we come to the discussion groups and things like that. I've been to some study weeks where people come away and they say, I had the worst group, that leader was useless. Okay? It's not just up to the leader, it's up to all of us. That's why we're here, that's why we're doing the workshops, and that's good. So no matter what, we'll always get something out of it. Why? Because we're talking about the Bible. We're talking about the hope of the kingdom and the things of Jesus Christ. We're learning about a character that God chose. Okay? It's a good point. Yeah. They had a huge similarity that overcame everything. So that's that point there. And lesson for us, page 129 of the notes. It's actually, the think about there. Could we get the next someone to read it out, the next reader or next couple of readers? Think about on page 129. That's agape. Filio, yes. Thank you very much. Okay, so at the top there where it talks about developing those two types of love, there are two types of love. One's agape, is a self-sacrificial love, and philia is just love, like a friendship love, is it? Yep, like a friendship love type love. So there's the two loves. So what it's saying is And then down further where it quotes, I've highlighted there, look not every man, just near the end, on his own things, but every man also on the things of others, and let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. So let's not just think about what Dave wants, what I want to do, you know. I want to play table tennis, but maybe not everyone else does. So I should try and think about what you guys are thinking about. And it's the same at study week. We need to think about what others are thinking about. And then in relation to what we've just been speaking about, which was also in Christ Jesus. So the mind that Christ had, we need to have, try and have that mind. We need to try, and we know that the mind that Christ had was everything that God was looking forward to as well. So we need to try and be like that by studying the Bible, by talking to each other, and by always coming back to that thing that we have in common, which is the hope of the kingdom. Okay, we need to move on because I've got 10 minutes. Okay, and then we're having pizza. Yeah. Okay, so I call the next part Comfort in Yahweh. This is part two here. And we'll have to race through this. I kind of didn't want to have to race through it, but we're going to. Okay, 2 Kings chapter 2, verse 1. If I could get someone to read that for me, please. Kezia.
And it came to pass when the Lord was about to take up Elijah into heaven by a whirlwind, that Elijah went with Elisha from Gilgal.
Thank you very much. What we're finding out there is that Elijah has been told that he's going to be taken up in a whirlwind. Okay, so it came to pass when Yahweh would take up Elijah into heaven by a whirlwind. So we know that Elijah's going to be taken up into a whirlwind. We can assume that he would also know that he was going to be taken up into a whirlwind, because we'll see that there were some other people that knew and that were saying to Elisha, hey, did you know he's going to be taken from you soon? So other people knew, so we're assuming that Elijah did as well. Now on page 131 there, it'd be good if you could have a look at this in your own time there. Third paragraph, Elijah has a tendency to fear the unknown and to become a recluse in times of trial. Okay, so we've been through the story. There's times in Elijah's life where it's just too much for him and he does the sprint and gets out of there and just can't handle it. Okay, when Jezebel said, I'm gonna get you and I'm going to kill you, he got out of there and went and just hid in the desert and asked God to take his life from him. So Elijah, we see, he's that kind of person that tries to get out of there. And we see that actually happening now as well. We know that he knows that he's going to be taken up, he's going to be taken away, but he doesn't know what's going to happen. He doesn't know where he's going to go, what's going to happen, how it's going to happen. He doesn't know. So he's always been the kind of man that he knows what's going to happen. He knew that when he took the rain away from the nation, that when he prayed for it, he knew God would bring it back. He knew that when he was making that prayer for that sacrifice, that God would engulf it or would take the sacrifice. He knew that. But now he doesn't know what's going on. And when I was going through this by myself, I thought, yeah, this is interesting, but you know, it wasn't until later on that I actually found it really interesting and actually quite powerful for ourselves as well. So that's what we want to run through in the next 7 minutes. So what we'll do is, I was going to go through them all, but we've got Bethel. Okay, so Elijah and Elisha go to Bethel, they go to Jericho, and then they cross the Jordan. And the point that's being made here... The point that's being made here is that these places are actually to comfort. Elijah. So on page 133 of your notes, we've got there Genesis 28. No, we'll go to. We'll go to Genesis 28, verse 10 to 19. If we could get... We're not going to go through all of these examples. It'd be great, if you could do that in your own study there, because it's worth doing. Okay, because we can. I think there is a little bit of a point that why that the notes are bringing out why he was taken to these places, because there's some things that happen in these places that would be very, very comforting for him. Can we have the next couple of readers reading from verse 10 to 19, please?
And Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran. So he came to a certain place and stayed there all night, because the sun had set, and he took one of the stones of that place and put it at his head, and he lay down in that place to sleep.
Then he dreamed, and behold, a ladder was set up on the earth, and its top reached to heaven. And there the angels of God were ascending and descending on it.
And behold, Yahweh stood above it and said, I am Yahweh, God of Abraham, thy father, and the God of Isaac. The land whereon thou liest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed.
And thy seed shall be the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west and to the east, and to the north and to the south. And in thee and thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed.
And behold, I give up.
Verse 19, is it?
Yeah, keep going.
Keep going. Go to verse 19, yeah.
Thank God. And behold, I am with thee, and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest, and will bring thee again into this land, for I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken unto thee, Lord.
Jacob awaked out of his sleep and said, surely the Lord is in this place.
He was afraid and said, how dreadful is this place? This is none other but the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven.
And Jacob rose up early in the morning, and took the stone that he had put for his place, and set up for a pillar, and put oil on the wall.
And he called the name of that place Bethel, but the name of that city was called Dwellers at First.
Okay, so why have we looked up Genesis 28? Now, I'm not going to say... myself, that God deliberately sent him to Bethel for this reason. But when Elijah, when God said go to Bethel, and he went to Bethel, what would he have been thinking of? Being the man that he was, he knew the history of the nation. He knew the promises to the nation, because he thought he was going to be the one to bring the tribes back, the nation back together. So what from reading Genesis 28, what can we sort of perhaps suggest that Elijah may have thought by walking into the gates of that city? Yep. Samet and Micah, it's probably worth writing these points down in your notes. Yep. What about him? What did we just read about? Yeah. Why did he set up the pillar? Yep. And what did the angel say? What was he told there? God was going to be with him. Yep. The descendants. So what we have is the promises. We have the promises being told to Jacob there in Genesis chapter 28. And he called that place Bethel because of that. Because he saw this vision. And he was told that God was going to be with Jacob was told that God was going to be with him. He was told about the promises that were given to Abraham, which is therefore through the seed of Jacob, because Jacob was a descendant of Abraham. So when Elijah goes Bethel, oh, that's the place that Jacob called it Bethel, because that's where the promises, that's where Jacob was told of the promises, and that God would be with him forever, and that God is still with me, and that God is still with our nation, and that his promises will definitely come true. See how that would be a comfort for Elijah at this time? And the rest of the verses go through as well, and they have some other great points like that as well. So now, I think that's a brilliant one, though, to point out for that one. And it's definitely worthwhile going through, if you haven't already, through those others there, and having try and get an understanding of what Bethel would have meant to Elijah. Okay, Jericho. Joshua chapter 2. Can we have the next person? Thank you. Thank you. The next person reading Joshua chapter 2, please. And we'll be pausing soon for pizzas, I promise. We'll just finish. Thank you, and could the next reader please read verse 24. Thank you very much. Okay, so from reading those two verses, these are the first two points here under our notes on Jericho. What can we gather? When God said, Elijah, you're going to go to Jericho, what would he have been thinking of? Possibly. What was Jericho in the history of Israel? The first victory in the promised land. God promised them a land. Joshua was the one that took them into that land, and Jericho was the first city that they took. We know that through the seed of Abraham, as we just saw, and through Jacob, they were promised, the nation is promised something. And we know that Elijah knew that because he was trying to bring the nation back together. So in going to Jericho, he would remember that God keeps his promises. That the promise that had been that he had been looking for would come true, and that he could place his trust in Yahweh. What about verse 24? There's something that's very interesting about that verse.
It says, "Truly, God's given us land."
Yes. So whose victory is it?
God.
It's God's victory, and Elijah had been fighting to bring the people back to their God. And Elijah would also know from the story here in history of his nation that God would do it and God would bring it back together. He didn't have to worry. And just like it as well, God would also be with him. When he took him in the whirlwind, he could have trust and faith in God that he would be with him. Okay, Jordan. This, I believe, also would have given confidence to Elijah. Page 135 there. In Joshua 1, verses 1 to 6, what happens there is we see a change in leadership. The leadership goes from Moses to Joshua, and what happens is they cross the River Jordan, and it's much like the story that we come to soon with Paul. As soon as the high priest's feet touched the River Jordan went and pushed back, right back. And once they crossed, this was just before Jericho, once they crossed this river, they were then entering into that promised land that God had given them. No one would hurt them. That's what God says to them. No one will hurt you. And that God was with them, and that then the inheritance was divided amongst them all. So again, by him going to the River Jordan, and as we'll see with Paul, they do the exact same thing. He strikes it with his mantle, as we've seen, and the waters push back and they walk across it. I mean, that's just a spitting image of what happened with the nation. So again, that would have helped him to have trust in Yahweh. Now we'll just run through these last points here. Bang. Okay. The application on page 135 and 136 there at the end. This is in regards to ourselves. This is a lesson for us. It says there down the end of the application, we find it difficult to encourage one another and openly show how we feel about our friends. Consider the following verses. And then it says, God encourages us all the time and has given us examples of how he has done this to characters in the Bible. Now, we'll run through these. I've just got jotted down some points from these verses. So Psalm 27 talks about that we should wait on the Lord and that he will strengthen your heart. Yeah, so this is in regards to us now, young people. This is in regards to at times when we need God's strength, at times when we need to be sharpened as we sharpen each other. Because this isn't just what God can do for us. It's also how we can work with each other, how I can walk up to Ben and say, Ben, how are you going, mate? Talk to him about the kingdom. Talk to him about Bible study. Ask him how he's going. Ask him how his relationship with God is. Okay, because we have that in common. We're different, but we have that in common. And this is how Elijah and Elisha worked as well. And also how God worked with them. Daniel 10, they're told there to fear not, peace be unto thee, be strong. This is what an angel says to Daniel. He says, fear not, peace be unto thee, and be strong. And then it says, and immediately I was strengthened. That's what Daniel says in Daniel 10. Deuteronomy 1. Moses saying to encourage Joshua because he would bring them into the land. Moses says to the people, he says, Joshua's going to have a really hard time, but I need you to encourage him. Okay? He's going to lead you, and he's going to lead you into the land that God has promised. So encourage him. Be with him. Young people, we're all going to the kingdom. God's promised us the kingdom. Encourage each other. Encourage each other in the study for that we're doing for study week. Encourage each other in baptism. Talk about it. Haggai 2, verse 4. Be strong, it says. It says there to be strong. That why be strong? Why should we be strong? Well, it then says at the end of that verse, that because Yahweh is with you. Okay, so at times when we're feeling down and at times when we're finding things hard, remember this. The most powerful and the only God in the whole world is with you. And Elijah knew that as well. He was going to be taken in a whirlwind. He didn't know where he was going to go, but he knew one thing. Yahweh, his God, was with him. Deuteronomy 3, verse 28, again, is exactly the same as before. It talks about that Moses wanted the people to encourage Joshua, because it's not easy leading that whole nation into the promised land. It wouldn't have been an easy thing. It was all up to him to lead them in there, and he needed that encouragement. We're going to be leaders in the community. We're going to be leaders in our own ecclesia. We need encouragement from each other. And this is a very powerful one as well. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 2, Paul says, remember me and remember how I've lived. He says, remember the traditions that I've put in place. And so, young people, we need to remember those that have gone before us. We need to look to the old people in our ecclesia and ask them questions. Say, hey, I don't understand what this verse is talking about. I'm doing this study for study week, and I don't get why Elijah walked up and just threw the coat on Elisha and kept walking. So speak to them. They'd love to speak to you. And those that have come before us, you know, it talks about a great cloud of witnesses. And that's like there's so many people that have run the race that we've been in, you know, that we're in now. So many people have already run that race. And Jesus Christ is at that finish line and he's waiting for us to reach out and to grab his hand. And that time is not that far off at all. So, and we need to be encouraged by that. Be encouraged by Elijah. Be encouraged by Elisha. As iron sharpens iron, let's learn these lessons and put them into practice. And one day soon, our countenance will be as that of our Lord and our Saviour, Jesus.
Okay. So Dave's done a really good job in leading us up to basically my section, which is right at the footstep of Jordan, the River Jordan. Okay. So he's told about how he's met Elisha. They've had this journey together. It's been 10 years, basically, from when they first met. And now it's come to the point when this is the final run before Elijah is to leave Elisha and the known world. So Just in my section here, we're still going to do a bit of group activity to encourage doing the stuff in the notes, because it's really valuable to do it in your own private study, but also we'll do it together so we get a feel of how to do it. Because if you're like me, I'm not much of a studier. I can't really just sort of sit down and just sort of open many books and just start getting all the information. So this, when I did this sort of exercise through this section, it was real help, so I really recommend doing it. Okay. So we'll start our section on page 138 of the notes. Okay, so as Dave led us to, he's basically come to Jordan, and he's got his mantle, and he's smashed the water, and the water's just gone back, and they're able to walk across on dry land. So there's a phrase that's we might just quickly read it. 2 Kings chapter 2 and verses 7 and 8. Who was our next reader? Phil. Second Kings chapter 2, verses 7 and 8, please.
And 50 men of the sons of the prophets went and stood to view of Pharaoh. And they too stood by Jordan. And Elijah took his mantle and wrapped it together and smote the waters. And they were divided hither and thither. So they too went over on dry ground.
Okay. Thank you. All right, so we'll quickly look at this. This is now going to be our first exercise together. And this is that phrase called, they too. Now, as it says in the notes, it's only sort of mentioned about 9 times in the whole of the Bible. And 6 of the times, well, 3 of the times are actually in this record, and another 3 is in other parts of the Old Testament and New, which really sort of bring out this point about this relationship that Elijah and Elisha had developed over the 10 years that they'd been together. So we might just quickly do this as a group activity. If you look down the bottom of your notes there, it says day two, little in bold letters. And it has the first example of Ruth and Naomi. So can Andrew, can you please look up Ruth chapter 1, verses 19? And then the next two, please look up Jonathan and David, 1 Samuel 23, verses 18. And the husband and wife one in Ephesians 5. You can do that, Kim. Thanks. Yep, when you're... one verse 19. Yep, okay, so basically in the context of that, of before that verse, it's talking about when Naomi and Ruth, their husbands had died, and they were in the land of Moab, and it was when the Naomi was going to come back to Israel to live, and she said to Ruth, "You stay here because it's your people, I'm just going to go back." And she said, no, I'm going to, wherever you go, I'm going to go. And so Naomi and Ruth had this relationship that was really strong. And they would, and Ruth would not leave Naomi. Okay, next one, thanks.
And they too made a covenant before the Lord, and David rode in the wood, and Jonathan.
Okay, so I don't know what the covenant they made with each other, David and Jonathan, but I'm sure you've heard plenty of talks before. If not, David and Jonathan were the best of mates. They were inseparable. They should have been enemies, because Jonathan's dad, Saul, absolutely hated David, but they had this close relationship together, and they even made a covenant with each other. So that's just reinforcing another friendship and how important a friendship is. Okay, and the last one, thanks. Alright. Okay, one of the most important relationships that you'll have in your physical life, I guess you could call it, besides your relationship with God. This is the second one, your husband and wife relationship. So, as it says, they two will become one flesh. They're that close that they're becoming one, okay? Yeah, that's nice. There's some married couple down the back just stroking hair and stuff. Very nice. Okay. So you sort of get the idea that Elijah and Elisha had this relationship. And we'll even see how far it went. Another type of relationship that's important later on as we go through the record. Okay, so they went along. smashed the water with the cloak. They walked across. And then they were chatting with each other. And Elijah makes this comment. And we'll read that. It's in 2 Kings chapter 2 and verses 9 and 10. We're back down the front again. Dave, do you mind reading that for us? It's even in your notes, so you can cheat if you like. Oh, on page 139.
And it came to pass when they were gone over that Elijah said unto Elisha, ask what I shall do for thee before I be taken away from thee. And Elisha said, I pray thee, let a double portion of thy spirit be upon me. And he said, thou must ask a hard thing. Nevertheless, if thou see me when I am taken from thee, it shall be so unto thee. But if not, it shall not be so.
Okay, so what did Elisha mean by this? What do you think he meant by a double portion of your spirit? Oh, no. What was he asking for? Was he asking for the power? He wanted to be twice as powerful as Elijah? I mean, because Elijah was quite a powerful person, obviously, by the power of God. But the things that he did, does he mean that? Is that what he wanted? What was the purpose of asking this? What did he mean by asking this? Too hard a question?
Alright. Does anyone remember
the firstborn principle? What did the firstborn get?
A double portion.
Wow. What does that mean? All right, this is the exercise we're going to do because this is really important, I think. On your page 149, okay. Did you? Oh, you always miss you. Good. No, thanks, mate. On page 140, we've got plenty of quotes to go through about the idea of this firstborn double portion thing that the firstborn got. So let's, if you just sort of maybe go groups of three, whatever, just in the little table that you're on, whoever you like, just the person next to you, go through each one and we'll just sort of go quickly after and we'll just sort of discuss it. So we'll give sort of maybe 5-10 minutes just to go through that. Got to work together as friends, people, all right? This is, we're putting this into practice.
No, I want to look up.
How are we doing, people? Doing all right? We're getting through it? Finished? Oh, look at that. Some of the groups at the back have. I'll give you another 2 minutes because we really got to sort of push on. Because we're going to go through it anyway, so... Just we're going to talk about it. See, you know, compare notes. All right? All right. Silence, everyone. Okay, we might start going through it, eh? Okay, so the first one, Exodus 13, verse 2. What does that tell us about the firstborn? Sorry? Yes, the firstborn was to belong to God, okay? Okay, good. What about Deuteronomy 21, verse 17? What does that tell us about it?
That the firstborn got a double inheritance.
Yep, so he was the person that should get the inheritance. Right. What about the third one?
Thank you.
Genesis 49, sorry, in verse 3.
That the firstborn was like the father, and relating it to Elisha, that Elisha wanted to be like Elijah and following his footsteps.
Yep. All right. What are some of the language that it says about how he was supposed to follow the father's footsteps? In what areas? His strength, yep.
Might.
Power. So all those the fantastic characteristics of the father that he should have shown, they were meant to follow in those footsteps. So as Dave just said, same as Elisha and Elijah, Elisha wanted to be the same as Elijah in power, in strength, in everything. All right. So does that make sense? All right.
What would that first one? Jimmy made a good. Tomorrow made a good point. The first one belonged to God, but in the sense of Elisha. He wanted to belong to God?
Yeah, no, that's good. No, that's good. Well, that was the whole idea. That was because we had some questions about. I'll save it for the last one. But yeah, we'll come back to that in a second. All right. What about 2 Chronicles 21? What did Jehoshaphat? Yep. So Jehoshaphat's son, the firstborn, got the kingdom, didn't he? All right, so he got the kingdom, even though all his other sons still got other cities. His firstborn got the kingdom. All right, so.
It says, in the margin, it says he's in partnership with his father, which is
yeah.
Actually one step further.
Yep. Yep, he was in partnership. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, no, good point. All right, I better catch up on the notes. All right, Numbers 8. Sorry, what was that?
With these blessings came responsibility.
Yes, exactly right. Yep. And because the Levites, when they were chosen as God's firstborns, as in that's why they became the priests of the nation, and they were to serve. They had the responsibility to serve the rest of the nation. All right. So that's as Jemima was just saying. Firstborn had responsibilities to fulfil. Okay. What about the last one?
The firstborn role can be passed on if they're not living up to their role.
Exactly right. So, yeah, that's right. As Fee just said, that the firstborn could lose his privilege of being the firstborn and the inheritance if he didn't live up to the standards and the responsibilities that he had to have. So if, like, he wasn't following in, like, this, when we learn out of Genesis 49, if he wasn't living up to the strength, the might, the excellency and the dignity of power that the father was showing, then and another son was, then that son could have got it. Reuben lost his birthright because he defiled his father and it was given to Joseph instead. We have other examples of, like, David wasn't the firstborn in his family, but God gave him the kingdom. Solomon, again, he was somewhere in the middle, and he was given the kingdom because of David sought him better to be the first, or to gain the firstborn's privileges. Okay, so does that make sense, right? So you get the idea of what the firstborn was supposed to be and what he got out of it. Okay, so when it comes to Elijah and Elisha, Dave's already sort of spoken about it a bit with that he wanted to be like Elijah. He wanted to follow in the footsteps of Elijah. And we even know when when Elijah was actually leaving, he yells out, "Father, my father," which in his eyes he saw Elijah as his spiritual father. And because Elijah was also the spiritual father of the school of the prophets. So that's why Elisha asked for the double portion of spirit, because he recognised that he wanted to follow in the footsteps of Elijah, and he was going to, and he also wanted the same character, well, a lot of the characteristics and the spirit of God that Elijah had. So does that make sense? Everyone happy with that? Yeah? No, Dave's happy. How about everyone else? Yeah? Everyone's sort of nodding their heads. Okay, cool. All right, so we'll just move on to...
the key point about that is Elijah's been told in his whole life that instead of thinking about himself, to actually think of other people.
Yep.
And to be a true shepherd of Israel, he had to be a father to be like God. And God, the characteristic of God is to save others and to care for others and to be like a father.
Mm.
That's God's character.
Yep.
And over Elijah's life, he has been taught to be a father. And
yep.
So it seems that his character has been changed.
Mm.
Instead of just being selfish, thinking of I'm only and left, I'm the only guy around here, suddenly he's actually taken care for other people and taken this young prophet under his wing to try and build up Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like his character, to the extent that when he goes, Elisha says, my father, he's just like a father, like a dad.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, and that's really important to, I guess, taking that into our lives. We have to, as we are growing up, we're obviously going to have younger people looking up to us. And we have to become that father figure, spiritual father figure, to everyone around us. As well as we probably looked up to people when we were younger and looked at them as a father figure. I had this firsthand, in a way, because... as most you know, my dad's not in the truth, and I didn't have any sort of necessarily a physical father to look up to spiritually. And most of you know Uncle Warwick Gorman. He took me under his wing, and we actually had a relationship. And one day, which kind of freaked me out at the start, but I didn't understand where it was coming from, he actually called me his son. And I sort of went, whoa, hang on. This is, yeah, I don't, what do you mean by that? Ever since then, he took me to a passage in Timothy where Paul actually calls Timothy his son. And I started seeing in his eyes what that actually meant to be a father and a son relationship and how he guided me to be baptised and so forth. So I can see that, this here means a lot to me personally because I understand it and understand the value of it. So it's, and that hopefully one day I can be the same to younger people looking up to me. Okay. Thanks for that. Okay, so we're moving on to our story. So they've been walking along the bank. They've gone across it, to Jordan, and they're walking along. And then Elijah goes, what can I do for you? Elisha asks for this double portion. And the other point is that he says, gee, that's a hard thing for me to do. I can't do that. And he says, if you see me depart, then... that means God's going to grant you that. All right. So as they're going along talking, maybe about this stuff, or maybe Elijah's giving him the final rundown of how to run the school of the prophets, or whatever they were talking about. All of a sudden, there might have been a crack of lightning, and this chariot on fire and horses come bolting down from the sky, and sort of make them break apart, come straight in between them. Now we don't know if the chariot kept going. Or if it just stayed there to block off, Elisha from running over to Elijah or whatever. And the next moment, Elijah gets taken up in this whirlwind. Now, it's a kind of a bizarre situation here, a whole bizarre event that's just going on here. Like, you're walking along, next minute this chariot of fire comes out of the middle of nowhere and separates you from, or separates Elijah and Elisha. Now, we want to look at this idea of the chariots and the fire and the horses, okay? I struggled with this over when I was looking at this because I didn't quite understand it fully, and it's a massive subject. The more I looked into it, the more I realised how much I should go into it, and the more I probably... well, it's really scary to go through it because it's so deep and it means so much, and it's really really hard to get your brain around it. So hopefully... I might be able to just give you a sneak preview on what I learnt, and please correct me if I'm wrong, because it's only just stuff I've read and try to put stuff together, all right? So hopefully I can make sense of it, and hopefully it's not too simple and boring, if that's the case. All right, so what's the first... we might just quickly look up 1 Chronicles chapter 28. Who is our next reader? Is that you read, didn't you? No? Yeah. Okay. You might read in 1 Chronicles 28 and verse 18. Now, the context of this verse is David's about to die, right? This is the last length of his life, and he's giving the spiel to Solomon on how to build the temple. He said, oh, look, I've given you the gold, I've supplied the gold, I've supplied the material. This is the plans for the site, everything like that. And this is the part he mentions about the ark. Okay. Thanks. Okay, so what's the chariot here combined with? All right, so what does it say? The pattern of the chariot of the
cherubim.
The cherubim, right, yeah. So we're just going to go through a couple of little chapters to paint this picture of what this whole event would have symbolised, okay? Because it's kind of a bizarre one. We want to hopefully try and work out what it all symbolised for Elijah, for Elisha, and for us. Okay, so we've got the chariot of fire and the horses, fire and horses, right? Okay, so it's referred to as, in this sense, chariot of the cherubim, so it relates to the cherubim. Cherubim, isn't it? Cherubim. That's right. Thanks. Cherubim. Yep. Okay. So it relates to the cherubim. What was the cherubim? Where was it? Exactly right. So it was, you had the ark, and you had basically the lid, which with the creatures which had wings and the four faces and all that sort of stuff, looking over the ark. All right. So we'll look at that a little bit later on, what that all means. Okay. And Psalm, you don't have to turn this up, but in Psalm 104, verse 4, it says, "Who maketh his angels spirits? His ministers a flaming fire." So what is it talking about there? What we've looked at the chariot, right? Now it's talking about the fire. What is the fire like? What's it include here?
Angels,
exactly right. So the angels are, in a symbolic sense, on fire. Right? Right, so don't worry, we'll paint the picture at the end, all right? Just go with me, go with the flow, okay? Go with the flow. All right, let's look up Psalm 68 and verse 17, thanks. Jamal? Psalm 68 and verse 17. This, they're probably not the notes, so I looked up a couple of other ones. Oh, it is actually, down the other page. That's right. Okay. So I was talking about thousands and thousands of angels. And the chariots of God are these angels, right? Does that make sense? So that they're symbolised as vehicles, that's what the chariots were, of God. So angels were chariots symbolising.
That verse talks about saints particularly.
Yes. Yep. Yep, which we'll get to in a second. Because that's when it can apply to us. Alright, and in Psalm 18 verse 10 it says, "And he rode upon a cherub," this is God, "and did fly. Yea, he did fly upon the wings of the wind." So God rides on this cherub, right? Which is just basically not the plural. What's it? Singular, is it? Singular of cherubim, right? Okay, Captain Obvious, thanks.
Where was that,
Psalm 18, verse 10. Yeah. It says, he rode upon a cherub, that's God, and did fly, yeah, he did fly upon the wings of the wind. So God's riding on this chariot. Alright? So, what does that all mean? Okay, so we've got this chariot of fire that comes screaming down and separates Elijah and Elisha. Now, it doesn't mention anything about a rider in this, because there wasn't necessarily a flaming person on there. Okay, like we said that the angels are considered fiery beings, symbolically, but it just says that, even though it says the chariot, I better read it, shouldn't we? In 2 Kings 2 and verse 11 and 12 it says, and it came to pass, as they went on and talked, that behold, there appeared a chariot of fire and horses of fire, and parted them both asunder. And Elijah went up in a whirlwind into heaven. And Elisha saw it and cried, my father, the chariot of Israel and the horsemen thereof. And he saw him no more, and he took hold of his clothes and rent them in two pieces. So we just have this chariot come down with horses and with no rider. Okay, now, it's not mentioned that there's a rider. All right, so it's basically saying that the angel, symbolically, is this chariot of fire and horses, comes screaming down and separates the two of them. All right, and then so Elijah can get whirled up into heaven. As such, so what did this mean for Elijah and Elisha, particularly Elisha, because he was the one that hung around, right? What do you think this meant for Elisha? It's probably a bit of a hard question, but I just want to have a think about this. What would it mean for you if this chariot of fire, if you knew that this represented the angels with God on the reins, in a sense, symbolically, what would that mean to you?
That God was there.
Exactly. That God was there. And I reckon that it was that the chariot never left it never left Elisha. And I think this was saying that to Elisha that this chariot or the angel or God was with Elijah, now he's going to be with me. Because look at his response. He says, my father, the chariot of Israel and the horsemen thereof. Okay? So he's symbolising Elijah as that chariot or as a chariot. And as Andrew said before in that Psalm... I think it was 68, he said that refers to the saints as well, which we'll look at just a little bit, which basically means, or could be, you and I later on in the future. Okay, so he recognised that Elijah was this chariot that was working God's work, with God on the reins, directing Elijah wherever to go at that time in Israel. So he saw that Elijah symbolised that. And because, funnily enough, when Elisha died, the king of Israel said exactly the same thing to Elisha. Word for word. Said exactly the same thing, my father, the chariot of Israel and the horsemen thereof. So that's a pretty powerful thing, I think, is that that Elisha and Elijah saw, well, Elisha saw Elijah as the chariot, as a being that was working God's will throughout the nation, and then Elisha was also considered the same by people around him. So does that make sense? Do you want me to sort of expand it a bit more, or is everyone happy with that? Does everyone get the idea? Because there's another quote in Psalm 33 where it talks about the angel of the Lord encampeth about them that fear him. Right, so if obviously Elisha feared God, right, so the angel of the Lord would encampeth about him, would circle around him to protect him, okay, from all the other fear from around, right, that he could be fearful of. And that actually was a practical, in just a couple of chapters in chapter 6 of 2 Kings, which we won't look at because it considers Elisha, is that the Syrian king was pretty annoyed with Elisha because he was giving away all the secrets that somehow, you know, in his eyes. So he went, that's it, we're going to deal with Elisha, go get him, and we'll knock him off. Because he's giving away our secrets. So this whole army goes down to where Elisha was staying in this city and circles around. And a servant comes to Elisha and goes, oh, you know, master, there's a whole massive army. What are we going to do? And Elisha just calmly says to him, don't worry, there's more for us than there is for them. And the servant, you can just imagine the servant just looking around just going, oh my goodness, are you crazy? Like, there is like thousands of people here and we've got a couple of farmers. You know, like, how are we more than them? And then so Elisha prays to God and says, God, open this guy's eyes. And so his eyes were open and he saw around the mountains surrounding the city chariots of fire. And it was considered as angels. The angels were encamping, were symbolised as chariots of fire. No riders, just as chariots of fire were surrounding the city. And then the miracle, the story keeps going on. It's a good one to look up to if you just want to read. It's a good story to read in chapter 6. So you get the idea that to Elisha, this was a separation from Elijah, and now saying, you know what, now you're going to be the chariot, Elisha. This is going to be you now. All right? You're going to be this chariot of fire, in a sense, and you're going to do my work. I'm going to be on the reins, and I'm going to direct you where to go. So does that make sense? Everyone happy with that? Yep? Okay. So, the big lesson, I think, from this, it's because the whole night we've been talking about friendship, the importance of role models, importance on how we can strengthen one another, and that if we're not the right way, if we're directed like Caleb was shown with these little examples here, you can either sharpen if you're the sharpen your friend, right? And if you're the knife and you want to be sharpened, you've got to be in the right direction, right? And they've got to be in the right direction to sharpen. Otherwise, if you just sharpen like that, you're in the wrong direction, it's just going to blunt you and you won't become spiritual. So if your friends and you aren't in the right direction, you're going to be bluntened. You're going to be useless for doing anything. It's just a piece of metal, not a knife. So that's what we've been looking at all night. So what I'm sort of suggesting now is, can we say, like Elisha did to Elijah, to anyone in this room, anyone that we know, that they are a chariot of Israel, in a sense, spirit, like symbolically? Are they someone who is being directed by God, who God is in control of, and is doing the work of God? Can we say that about any of our friends that we hang around in? Can we say that? And more importantly, can anyone say that about us? Are we being controlled by God? Or are we just a free horse running in the wild, doing whatever we like? Psalm 33 is a really good one for that as well. It's more about the fear of the Lord, but it also talks about a horse being broken, in a sense, if you look at it. Because God wants to break the heart, as in break you in, like a horse as in a sense, so that you can be used for something. Are we the same? Or are we just a free roaming horse, chariot, whatever you want to say, doing whatever we feel? So I think in your notes, in your own time, think about this. Think about how you are sharpening your brothers and sisters, your friends, your family, and are you being the good role model, a father figure, a chariot figure in your life? Okay? So does that make sense? Something to think about.
Mm. The same is saying, lots of people are able to teach us. And yep. That's really what Elijah was. He was like an instructor.
Mm.
He was able to say, listen, I'm
Yeah, no, that's so true. What was that again?
1
Corinthians 4 and verse 15. That's a good one. Write that down in your notes somewhere so you don't forget that one. The importance of being a father figure over just being a teacher. Okay. Alright, so just to sort of like finish off for anyone sort of wants to say anything or any questions that people have, I just want to look at this last aspect of the whirlwind, okay? Now the notes sort of go into about why, I think actually the notes do, or might have been somewhere else I read. Won't go into why he didn't actually physically go to heaven and all that sort of stuff. That's not, we know that. We know that he didn't go physically go to heaven, right? To be with God and all that sort of stuff, right? Kezia thinks otherwise. You think, oh, okay. We'll deal with that later, I think. I'll take you out and stain you. But the idea of this whirlwind, why the whirlwind? What was the big deal about this whirlwind? Okay, so the notes talk about this a little bit in the section David was talking about, and that the whirlwind was like Elijah's character. And you might remember from last, if you were here last study group, when he was on the Mount of Horeb, he went and had those three things that that happened. The strong wind, the earthquake and the fire, and then a still small voice. Okay. So I think that the whirlwind in that on Horeb represented Elijah, right? Because it makes a big deal about the strong wind on Horeb. It says that it came in, shook the foundations of the mountain, and broke up rocks and all that sort of stuff. Now, mountains in the Bible symbolise nations. All right, so we have the mountain of God, I think it was. Is that what the Horeb is? I could be wrong there. I think it was the mount. Anyway, the mountain, right, symbolises Israel at this time, right? The mountain that he was on. Elijah comes in, he doesn't know his background, he just came on the scene like that and shook the foundations, you know, rocked everything, blew everything apart, caused, you know, just whoa, shook the whole mountain. So that symbol, I think that symbolised Elijah. And then the other two, I think, symbolised the other two kings that he had to anoint, and a still small voice was Elisha. Feel free to talk to me about that after if you want, but that was last session, so we won't talk about that too much. But so I think that's the reason why he went up in a whirlwind, to say Elijah's method is now leaving. Now it's making room for this still small voice. It's making the way for Elisha and, of course, all the prophets, Jesus and the apostles and that. Even though they did amazing things, Elisha did amazing things too, miracles and that. But it wasn't the same as what Elijah was. It wasn't the same characteristics as Elijah showed. Okay? So I think that's why the whirlwind, he was taken up in a whirlwind to show to Elijah and to, of course, us, that now that sort of way was taken away and Elijah's way of preaching was removed for the time.